Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Pets and Vets this afternoon, and here to take your calls is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York, that is. The number to call is 800-348-2551. It's 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Scharf is a 1985 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell, and he is our go-to guy on dogs and cats, although does not do livestock. Just bear that in mind. And the number, once again, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Again, we'll try to keep the show moving. As we get into this, the calls will come fast and furious. I will try to move it along a little bit. So if I nudge you, it's not that I don't love you. It's just that I want to get everybody in that we can. Dr. Scharf, welcome back. How are you, Ron?
Thanks a lot, Ray. I'm great. Thanks for having me. And it's a great nice day out there. The sun's out and
back to
good
a
to
little
go.
Normal temperature. It was
a little more, absolutely. It's funny how 40 degrees the other day felt so much colder than 40 degrees a week prior to that.
Well,
I don't know what it
that.
Is.
Yeah, it's true. Perspective, I guess. Yeah. So anything to mention before we get rolling? We got a full bank of calls already.
No, I think we're good to go. I think that there's always things that are happening, things that are in the air. There's a few things in the Novartis company that they had a problem getting out some of their products. And in the veterinary field, we use a lot of the Novartis products, the Deramax for joint problems and their Interceptor for heartworm. And so we're having to scramble to find replacements, and we're doing that. We don't know when that's going to come back. But it happened around the same time that Excedrin news story came out about the Excedrin being contaminated. So I'm wondering if it's the same factory in Lincoln, Nebraska, that's the problem.
Interesting. Now, is this the same situation that hospitals and doctors are finding themselves in these days where there are shortages of some drugs?
Yes, absolutely. It's very frustrating. And in the veterinary field, we don't have the wide panoply of choices and medications that you do in human med sometimes, so that when we get something on either a back order or something's off the market or sometimes you don't even find out what the reason is, it's just unavailable, we have to scramble. It's a very challenging thing for veterinarians in particular, and I know that it's a big problem in the human field as well, and you just got to make do. You got to be creative.
Okay, let's go right to the phones, and we start out with Roxanne and Schenectady. Hi, Roxanne.
Hello. Hi, Ray. Hi, Dr. Scharf.
Hi, Roxanne.
Yes. Hi. I would appreciate so much any advice and insight you can give me. My cat, who is 5 to 6 years old and healthy, other than the fact she was diagnosed with diabetes 6 months ago, and she's not overweight. So, and it just seems to have come out of nowhere. And my vet put her on Glipizide, so she's been on the Glipizide for 6 months. And recently I've been reading about that, how it can possibly damage the liver, and it's kind of controversial, apparently. And I just find the whole situation to be, you know, very, very overwhelming. Like the thought of going to insulin is kind of a terrifying thought, too.
I can understand that, Roxanne.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing. It's a hard thing getting a diagnosis, an endocrine problem that could be tricky to deal with. But you feel like, how did my cat get this? What did she do to deserve this? Whatever. And there's just no explaining it, especially.
Yeah.
It is inexplicable when you say your cat's not overweight, because it's the vast majority of the diabetic cats I see are overweight. They're overweight, and they have a very often a scurfy kind of dandruff going on. And how to explain it, we don't know. You know, is there an autoimmune underpinning? We just don't know.
Yeah,
I think that the fact that you tried the Glipizide is a good thing. These medications as a way to try to avoid insulin are not a bad thing to do, but the odds are against them working. My understanding, Roxanne, is that there are at most 20% of feline diabetics that will respond to that. You know, for the 1 in 5 possibility, it's definitely a worthwhile thing. You also want to look into changing her diet. I don't know if you have already, but cats that are newly diagnosed as diabetics do better on a diet that is very high in protein and very low in carbs. So what is she eating?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and yeah, that's her secondary problem is I do try to keep it low carb. She's allergic to fish, and that's been a tremendous difficulty for me since fish is present in 90% of all cat food.
I know. Well, I think you might be able to find, if you look around, Roxanne, a food, it's kind of like an Atkins diet thing where it's very high on the protein, hopefully not fish-wise, and low in the carbs, and you might be able to reduce her insulin need that way also. But last thing I wanted to mention, Roxanne, if you do need to go to an insulin product, we find that there are some cats, diabetic cats, that will revert back to normal glycemia, and the ones that are most likely to do that are the ones that are started on the insulin product called glargine. It's a human insulin product. But if you could start her on the glargine, if that's okay with your vet, that plus the high-protein, low-carb diet might maximize her chances of changing her mind.
All right, Roxanne, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Nick in Johnstown. Nick.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
How y'all doing?
Hi, Nick.
I got a cat. Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I got a cat. He's like 14 years old now. His name's Junior, and he has a tooth infected in the back of his mouth. And I got an estimate from the vet here, one of the vets I was going to. They say it could cost up from within, $648.50 to $1,050.30. I'm just wondering if that's accurate or not.
So, Nick, it could be accurate. Not knowing anything about your cat, and other than the fact that his name is Junior and he's 14 years old, it's a little hard for me to fill in the blanks, but...
Yeah.
It is not unusual, Nick. Unfortunately, these things can run up because we need to use anesthesia. And whenever you have a 14-year-old cat, the best way to use anesthesia, the least risky, would be to put an intravenous catheter in, to run some fluid therapy in, to monitor the blood pressure. All this adds up. When it all is said and done, the extraction itself may only be a small fraction of the whole thing, but to try to cut corners means that there will be more risk in terms of will it be a good outcome. You know, you could have a rotten or infected tooth that's not in the mouth anymore, but the animal's no longer alive, and that's not going to get you anywhere either.
Yeah.
So I do recommend doing it the right way with the IV catheter, the fluids, monitoring the blood pressure, and also, lastly, doing a blood test beforehand to make sure that your junior has got no contraindications, things that would cause bad things to happen as a result of the anesthesia.
All right. Nick, thanks.
Good luck, Nick.
Let's go to Rachel in Poughkeepsie. By the way, an open line right now, 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rachel, you're up.
Hi, thank you very much.
Sure.
I have a cat who's about 8 or 9 years old, and she has developed hair loss on her belly, and I thought it might be fleas because she was scratching. I talked to several vets, and so I went and got the flea treatment. I gave her the flea treatment. It seemed to be getting better. That was about the beginning of March, so we're looking at it in another week. I can give her another treatment, but I noticed today that she's losing hair. Now, there's been some moving in our house. She's alone more than she used to be. I don't know if it's stress, but I noticed last night, like, her tail was had less hair. She's not an overweight cat. She doesn't have any dandruff. She seems to be healthy otherwise. She likes to play. She likes to be petted. She likes, you know, she's not acting sick. So I wondered if you had any advice.
Okay,
so Rachel, this is major big-time allergy season, and it has been for the last 2-3 weeks. Now, if you say your cat's scratching, I'd be more inclined to think of an allergy than to think about stress. Yes, they can get bald from stress. A cat can obsessively lick themselves to the point that there's no hair. However, that's more of a licking than a scratching, number one, in general. And also, you don't find any skin lesions when that's the case. If it's stress-related, 90%, if not more, do not have any kind of rash or redness to the skin or scabs or abrasions or anything like that. They just have this bald or truncated hairs in that one area. So given the fact that she's scratching, given the fact that we're in the allergy season now, first thing I think about was an allergy. And if it's not fleas, it could be something else. It could be something she's breathing in, or it could also be something that she's allergic to that she's eating. Okay. If she's something allergic that she's eating, no, I would not have expected it to have started as suddenly as you're describing. So I'll put my money with an allergic inhalant dermatitis, something she's breathing in. And if you're sure that there's no fleas, I'd go with that. Think about trying an antihistamine or else finding out what she's allergic to and addressing it at the root.
Thank you.
Rachel,
thank
you
very
much. Good luck, Rachel. Let's see if we can get another call in here before the break. Lisa in Montgomery. Lisa, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2-year-old female cat that we keep indoors, and about a few weeks ago, we were sitting in the living room, and we heard a scream, which didn't even sound like a cat scream, because it was just such an odd scream, and we realized that it was Luna, and she had then went to one of the chairs and sat on the chair, and she just looked kind of strange. So I picked her up, and it looked like she was almost like a little paralyzed, and she would look at me and just like start panting, and every time I picked her up, she would pant. So we called the vet immediately, and the vet couldn't see her that day because they were very busy and to keep a watch on her. It ended up that whatever happened totally went away, and she's totally fine now. And through that, I was doing some research on what it possibly could be, some kind of heart problem.
Yeah.
Or maybe even like a spider bit her. Do you have any ideas or which direction I should go?
Those two things that you just mentioned, Lisa, were the first two things that ran through my mind, and I'll tell you why. Cats that have a heart problem can sometimes throw a clot. And if they throw a clot, it could be instantaneous, it could be sudden, and it could freak them out. But it would not resolve as quickly as what you said. So that's when I said, probably not hard if it got better so quickly. Then I started thinking, could it be like a bug bite, like a spider bite? The spiders are out. This is a good time of year for that. And if it's perfect, then there's no evidence of anything other than maybe looking on the cat and seeing if there was a red spot. Hard to find when there's an animal covered with hair.
She's pretty fluffy.
And that was 2 weeks ago, and it lasted all of how long? Less than a day?
Like an hour. Like, you know, we were just really freaked out because we just never saw her like that.
I think a spider bite or something took her by surprise, whether it was a bite or some trauma or some kind of thing that just startled her. But unless you see it again, I think you have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, all right, thanks.
Lisa,
that's
sure thing,
good.
Lisa.
Thanks a lot. We got a break here, and we will come back with more with Ron Scharf. It's Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551. Back in a flash.
Support for Vox Pop comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Neil Simon's Rumors, weekends April 20th through May 6th in the Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. Mario's True Value Home Center, Valencia, New York, two locally owned locations, open 7 days a week for building supplies, equipment rentals, and hardware needs, featuring peach tree doors and windows, mariostruevalue.com. Harlow, Northampton, and Berkshire Classic Leather and Silver in Lenox, Massachusetts, featuring Briggs & Riley luggage, leather goods, silver jewelry, gifts, leather jackets, and coats and accessories by Brighton, harlowluggage.com. Pika's Farm Table, makers of quiches, soups, and pestos using fresh local ingredients, found in specialty food stores and farm markets throughout the Hudson Valley, pikasquiche.com. And the Williston Northampton School, a boarding and day school for grades 7 through 12, working to inspire students to live lives of passion, purpose, and integrity, williston.com.
I'll tell you what, Dr. Scharf has some good ears. This is a big band arrangement of Frank Zappa by the Ed Palermo big band, and He picked it right out. Not too shabby. The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Bill in Albany. Bill.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, Bill.
I have a dog. Hi. I have a dog named Bella. She's approximately 3 to 5 years old. We adopted her from a rescue group in Tennessee. She's Dalmatian, English Setter mixed. She has short, wiry hair, and she sheds and she sheds and she sheds. I brush her, and it's like snowflakes. I take her to the groomer, and the groomer suggests that she not be given a haircut, so to speak, or trim, because she is short hair. But when she is given a shampoo, it's a non-shedding shampoo. I'm a bleach blonde, semi-bald, and my wife says I'm jealous.
Yeah, if there's somebody she could just bottle that, you'd make a lot of money, Bill.
I know.
Yeah. So you ever hear of the Furminator?
No, I never heard of that.
So this is a, it's an industrial strength comb, basically. It's looks very similar to the kind of clipper blade that we use on the electric clipper when we clip animals. And we ourselves actually have sometimes get an Oster clipper used by the barber. But this blade is very hard, steel. It's very strong. And if you use it correctly, you could strip out 10 times as much hair from that dog as you would with a regular comb or brush. So I'd consider using a Furminator on a regular basis.
It's not painful for the animal?
Not if you do it right. Not if they don't have any skin lesions, scabs, bumps, you know, masses or anything. And you don't go too aggressively with it, there's no pain. So if you use it correctly.
Where can this be purchased?
Oh, almost any pet store. My vet hospital carries it just as a convenience, but I think you could get it almost anywhere, Bill. And I would think about using that a few times a week, and that would very much cut down on Bella's shedding, I think.
That's what my wife uses on me. Bill, thanks
and
a lot.
I could tell, right?
One other thing, Doctor. You may want to let your listeners know that there is an emergency clinic located in Lakeland, so that's open after hours.
Oh, absolutely.
True.
Absolutely.
I could... I was thinking about Luna and when her vet couldn't see the cat,
yeah.
You know, rather than just wait, there's an emergency, hospital in Lathan that's open in the evening
yeah.
and on weekends.
I think Luna was in Montgomery, though. That would be a good drive.
No, this is in Lathan, New York.
No, I think, yeah, okay.
But, Bill, I appreciate your mentioning that, and I'm not only interested in making sure everyone knows about that place, but they do an excellent job. It's called the Animal Emergency Clinic, or the Capital District Animal Emergency Clinic in full, and they're located at 222 Troy Schenectady Road, exactly, I would say, a mile and a quarter east of the Latham Circle.
Yes.
And their phone number is 785-1094. I've been very involved with them, especially last year. I'm the immediate past president of the board, and they do a great job. I can only speak very highly about that whole operation. Thanks for mentioning
it. Bill, thanks a lot for the call. We go to Laurel in Wendell. Hi, Laurel.
Hi. I run a small rescue where I live in Massachusetts, and we rescued a small dog. And the dog, the veterinary said he either got shot in the foot or bitten in the foot, and it's about a month-old wound. And now they said there's an infection in the bone called osteomyelitis.
Ouch.
We're treating with Baytril and pain meds, and he's very thin, but he started eating and coming around with electrolytes and stuff. Are we just prolonging his agony? Can we really arrest the infection, do you think? Is that very dangerous?
Laurel, it's very dangerous, but I wouldn't give up just yet. They do tend to be a little more resistant to getting taken care of than plain old skin infection. But if you're using the right antibiotic, it should come along unless there's a mitigating thing. Mitigating things such as, say, there's a foreign body stuck in there, or a mitigating circumstance such as a tumor, or, you know, something that's not likely but still possible. If there was an obvious history of some kind of trauma, either getting shot or bitten, it's not likely a cancer, of course, But a foreign body is a possibility. So if you see that it's not getting any better after a couple months, you start thinking about doing an exploratory. Lastly, Laurel, if your small rescue group can afford it, doing a culture and sensitivity is a great idea, where you take a sample of the exudate, the pus, and you send it to the lab for incubation. They culture it over the course of 4 or 5 days, see what kind of bacteria are in there, and then they can tell you the best antibiotics to use. Because likelihood is that it is a bacterial problem and not a fungal, because if it were fungal, then an antibiotic would not be helping either. So a culture and sensitivity, Laurel, is a good thing. And also, finally, if you could do a cytology, where you take some of that and you put it under a microscope, and you can sometimes get very helpful information as to whether or not it's a bacterial infection or a fungal. Are there any evidence of any kind of unusual cells in there that are growing, which would be more of a cancerous thing? An X-ray can tell you, is it crossing a joint? Because sometimes whether it's crossing the joint from one bone to the next bone will give you clue as to whether or not there's an infection or a cancer or something else. So bottom line, distilling it to the most simple thing, Laurel, is if you could do a culture and sensitivity, that is the best thing to do. But you need to bear in mind that very once in a while, if they're already on an antibiotic, that the antibiotic that they're on, even if it's not the best one to use, can sometimes interfere with the results of the culture. And so you need to interpret the results with a little perspective like that.
Thank you, Laurel, very much. Let's go to Alex in Ulster Park. You're on Vox Pop, Alex.
Yeah, hi. Listen, I'm driving, so I have to be kind of quick. You had a client on about 3 calls ago, a woman who had a diabetic cat.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get the first part of it, but anyway, I just want to say I went through that with my cat, who's 15 years old, and for 2 years now, I've had her on chicken soup for cat, the low-fat variety. And she's just slimmed right down, and the problem is completely managed. We have her checked with the vet every once in a while, and he said, just keep doing what you're doing. She's in great health.
She on insulin?
No.
Wow. Well, Alex, good for you. I'm so happy to hear that you were able to avoid giving her insulin, and she's not hyperglycemic?
Gosh, I don't remember that, to be honest with you.
Well, her blood sugar level is an important thing to monitor, and you don't see her drinking a lot of water or urinating a lot?
No, she just drinks water a little bit after she eats, and when she goes outside, she doesn't drink anything at all. She goes out of the house.
Well, how do you know she's diabetic, Alex?
Well, she was diagnosed that way about 3 years ago by the vet.
Well, was she showing
symptoms? He's the one that recommended this diet.
Right. Was she showing symptoms then? Was she drinking a lot then?
I got her that way from another person. I don't know what her prior history was.
So when you got her, she wasn't drinking like there's no tomorrow?
No, that's... Well, she was drinking quite a bit, more than she is now.
Okay.
I don't know... you know, and when she's in the house, she just doesn't, she's not drinking all the time. As I say, she's just drinks after she eats, and that's usually it.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, great.
Sounds like you're doing a great job, Alex.
Alex, thanks a lot. Drive safely. Let's go to Martin in Rhinebeck. Martin.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Between Christmas and New Year's, my 5-year-old Cocker Spaniel developed an itch and put in her... You know, it went for her ears and her belly and her legs and everything else. And we took her to the vet. The vet said she probably has some sort of allergy to God knows what. She was put on steroids and baths, et cetera, et cetera. Everything went, and nothing really improved this for about 2.5 months, 3 months. And a week ago, I finally took her back to the vet, another vet, did a scraping and found sarcoptic mange. Put her on imivectin, and how long does it take for that stuff to work?
Well, Martin, you usually have to do the ivermectin a few times.
Okay.
We'll usually repeat it, if my memory serves, every couple of weeks for several several administrations,
right.
And you should be done with it within, I'd say, two to five weeks.
Okay. But her symptoms won't go away right away. I mean, that's the point.
They should taper within the first week or two. You should see something going on.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And the second part of this, of course, I was cuddling her in my lap, trying to soothe her and everything before we made this diagnosis. I now have mange.
Well, I was just about to say, that's what we call a zoonotic disease. It's something that we can catch, we humans can catch from animals. And, yeah, I can't tell you if humans respond as quickly as the animals. The ivermectin is pretty convenient, and if it's used correctly, it's usually not associated with side effects. I don't know what they use in people.
Oh, I had some sort of cream, Premethrin 5%. That's what I put on.
Okay, well, good to know that, for everyone to know that sarcoptic mange is transmissible from animals to people, but at least the case in animals, it's pretty easily taken care of once it's diagnosed.
Goodness. I mean, it's just I can't watch the poor animal.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty bad.
Martin, thanks a lot for the call.
Okay,
bye
Martin.
Bye.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. 800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf is here. You are listening to Vox Pop. It is Pets and Vets Day, and we go to Amy in Rome. Hi, Amy.
I recently switched my cat from kibble to a raw food diet a few months ago, and I just wanted him to talk a little bit about the benefits of a raw food diet versus kibble, because I've noticed a lot of benefits since doing so.
Well, Amy, that is a big question. It's a very good question. It's a question that a lot of vets have a challenge dealing with, because we were taught, it was drummed into our heads in vet school, that raw food's dangerous because of the risk of food poisoning, okay? So food poisoning as in salmonella or E. coli or things like that. So about 15 years ago, when people started venturing into trying out raw food on their animals, vets such as myself were a bit aghast. Oh no, watch out for food poisoning. and surely I know a lot of holistic veterinary practitioners that are still very leery of it because of that possibility. But after 10 or 15 years of seeing clients of mine using raw food on their animals and seeing so few instances of food poisoning, I still tell my clients that there is that risk and that possibility to keep in mind. But I've seen so many of these animals not have any problems as a result of it and do pretty well. And I've seen a lot of them do very well. And then the only other concern, Amy, at that point is whether or not it's a good enough formulated diet so that the animal is getting 100% complete and balanced nutrition. Because a lot of people, if they're feeding their animals raw food, may interpret that to mean just giving them all meat, or maybe some meat with some bones or ground-up bones, in which case they're not getting some of the trace vitamins and minerals and nutrients that they need from other sources, such as vegetables or whatever. So as long as it's 100% complete and balanced nutrition, Amy, and as long as we don't have that food poisoning to worry about, I think that it's I'm a little leery to say it over the airwaves, but it might be okay to do.
Amy, thanks a lot, and thanks for listening in Rome, New York. Nice to have you aboard. And Brian in Albany, I suspect maybe the doctor answered your question, but let's go for it anyway. Hello, Brian. Well, I guess you did answer the question because he's not here. There he goes. Well, you answered the question. It was about raw diet for dogs, and you've done it, by golly. Diana in Woodstock, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Yes, good afternoon. Dr. Scharf, I have an 18-year-old cat. She's basically indoors. One day we noticed a raw sore by her mouth on the outside. It didn't affect her eating or anything else. But we took her to the vet, and the vet looked at it and gave her a shot of antibiotics. She said that would be good for 2 weeks. Now it's about 2.5 weeks, and the sore has dried up. It's not bleeding at all, but she still has this lump, and the fur is gone. And I don't know whether it'll just go away on its own. She seems to be happy and content, but I don't know what to do at this stage because she is an older cat.
Right. So, Diana, the only injection of an antibiotic that lasts 2 weeks that I know is a very, very nice medication called Convenia. It's a cephalosporin, which has very good activity against infections in the skin. Not all of them, but many of them. And
okay.
Without seeing the actual lesion, Diana, it's a little hard for me to tell you what it is and what to do. I would suppose, though, that if there had been redness or signs of inflammation 2.5 weeks ago that resolved, so that all you have left now is the remnants of that, it might have been the right thing to do, and you may or may not need another one of those injections. It depends on how much improvement you see. So how much improvement would you say there is, Diana? How does it compare to 2.5 weeks ago?
Well, it's not, it doesn't bother her at all. It's not bleeding, but it's definitely a lump, but it's all dried up.
Was it bothering her 2.5 weeks ago?
No, it really wasn't bothering her too much. Otherwise, other than, if we tried to touch it, she would bite us.
And that's not the case now?
She doesn't like it touched, but no, she doesn't seem uncomfortable at all. And so, I don't want to subject her to any kind of anesthesia or, surgery to remove it because she is an old cat.
Sure. So what I would say, Diana, my recommendation, if it was my patient, is that if the injections seem to help and yet the lesion is still there, I would try a second one of the same stuff. And on the other hand, if you did think that there was extreme improvement and all you have left are the remnants of something that the body needs to heal afterwards, then you might be good just leaving her alone.
You think the lump will go away in time?
I think it's possible, but I don't know what caused the lump, Diana. For instance, if the cat got poked by something and there's a little splinter or thorn still in there, then it won't get better, okay? But if it was something like a poke with a splinter or a branch that's no longer in there and that the injection that she got 2 weeks ago took care of that infection, you might be done.
Yeah, we thought it might be a spider bite.
Could be, but I don't think that would have lasted 2 weeks and caused a lump, so I doubt it.
Oh, okay.
All right, Diana, we have a break here, but thanks so much for calling. It is Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551. One open line at the moment, 800-348-2551. More coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, glaucoma management, and specialty contact lens fitting. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Steel Engineering and Consulting, Troy, New York, addressing building problems through engineering investigations and architectural designs. STEELEEngineering.com. Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more. ParadiseCopies.com. Hudson Valley Community College's Workforce Development Institute, career training in solar energy, energy efficiency, indoor environmental technician, pharmacy technician, and more, including online and client-specific training, wdi.hvcc.edu. And the Palace Theater, Albany, New York, presenting Gordon Lightfoot May 19th at 8 p.m. Tickets available beginning this Saturday. PalaceAlbany.com for more information.
Fox Pop on WAMC. We hit the home stretch at 800-348-2551. Our monthly pets and vets with Dr. Ron Scharf. Back to the phones we go. Becky in Goshen. Becky, you're on.
Hi. About 2 years ago, I adopted a stray cat, and he's about 5 years old now. And he loves the outdoors. You know, he's an indoor-outdoor cat and absolutely loves the outdoors. And I need to find him a home. And he's been offered a few homes, but everybody wants to keep him as an indoor cat. And I guess my question is, do you feel that a cat at his age who's you know, used to being able to go outdoors, if he could adjust happily to an indoor life.
I think that is possible, Becky, but I think it's a challenge because we get used to our patterns, and so do cats, and we get used to our freedom, and to have that freedom curtailed abruptly is something that most cats won't be very placid about, and they'll kind of act out in ways that that'll express their unhappiness. And I think that what it comes down to at that point, Becky, is a contest of wills. Who's got the stronger will? Is it the cat who's so used to loving that great outdoors and needing to get back out there? Or is it the person whose house is being turned upside down and, you know, in whatever ways you're cat chooses to do it. It's a similar thing when you try to change a cat who's used to getting as much food as they want to a cat who's getting a limited, finite amount of food, and they could act out in similar ways. And, you know, I had a cat that we try to cut back on the food, and we found that he started gnawing on things like the minute hand of our clock on the wall. And, you know, so they do express their feelings in interesting and challenging ways. So I think it depends. If you can engage that cat, Becky, if you could devise ways to take his attention up indoors by virtue of, say, constructing a jungle gym inside the house and giving him what they call vertical challenges so that he's got these branches or shelves that go up to the ceiling that he could, you know, and maybe he could change the configuration here and there and challenge them that way and play with a laser light, and I don't know if you need to retire from employment and devote yourselves entirely to entertaining the cat or not to have this accomplished successfully, but there are ways that you could try to ingeniously think of how he might take his time up so that he's not missing going out as much, and then maybe getting some mechanical mice or, I don't know, some mice, I don't know. But you got to just think of ways that it might distract him from it, then hopefully if you could last a month or two, then maybe he would calm down. But I think it would take you a while.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your opinion.
Good luck.
Betsy,
good luck.
Thank you very much.
Good work you're doing.
You're of the mind that, you know, in a perfect world, cats stay inside?
I'm in the mind that in a perfect world, they go outside, is because in that perfect world, they can't get run over by cars. They can't be subjected to eating rat poisoning or malicious acts or getting stuck up trees and unable to back up down out of them.
No.
That's the ideal world. And then they're getting more exercise. They're getting more stimulation.
Yeah.
And that's the best. But I think that unless you live way out in the country, I think that the risks from getting run over, from malicious acts, from fan belt injuries, you know, in the wintertime,
yep,
these outdoor cats, they go out, it gets cold, they crawl up under this nice warm hood,
yep,
and they fall asleep, and in the morning, mom or dad goes to work, starts,
yeah,
the car, and they're sliced and diced. And
yeah,
I see a lot of injuries that way. So the ideal world is outdoor exercise without anything bad happening to them.
Okay, let's go to Dan in Albany. Dan, you're on.
Hey, Dr. Sharp. Thanks for taking
Hi, Dan.
My call. So I have a 2-year-old cat that I rescued from a golf course, and we've had him for about 6 months, and about 2 months ago, he started hacking, and not the type of hack, not the furball hack, but just a very dry hack that where nothing comes out, and he's doing that between 2 to 3 times a day now. My vet has recommended some Pepcid AC, and that's just not working. I was wondering what your thoughts were. Any other recommendations?
Okay, so Dan, sometimes in a cat, it's hard to differentiate between a cough and a vomiting or something like that. The Pepcid would be more for a GI problem because it calms down an upset stomach. And cats get commonly they get upset stomachs, either because the stomach itself or because the stomach is responding to a kidney problem that can sometimes happen that'll affect the kidneys. But if you're talking about a dry and productive cough or a hack, I'm thinking more respiratory system. If it's respiratory system, you're looking at something like a bronchitis. If you're looking at a bronchitis, it could be infectious, you know, a bacterial thing, or it could be allergic, like an asthma thing. Now, in either case, they might respond to a bronchodilator, something that makes the airways bigger. And an example of that would be theophylline. Okay, but it's best to get a diagnosis. And if you're talking a cough for a few months, Dan, I would say get a chest x-ray if at all possible and see if you could narrow down what's going on and get, if you have a diagnosis, then the likelihood of being able to take care of the cat goes way higher than if you're just shooting in the dark.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. Marjorie and Saugerties, you're on.
Hi. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
Hi, Dr. Stark.
Hi, Marjorie.
How are you?
Great.
I'm calling as a proponent of raw feeding. I've been raw feeding my dogs for the last 7 years, and the person who had called before was addressing cats. Now, it's my understanding that cats are obligate carnivores, meaning that they won't receive any benefit from eating any vegetables that might have been added to whatever prepared raw, you know, mixture she purchases. And as far as dogs go, and that's where I have my experience, just to cover myself, to make sure that even though I'm giving organ meat and tripe and, you know, bones and everything, liver, I use a product called Nupro, and it's a it's like a vitamin supplement. It's a liver-based product, and you can mix it with a little bit of water and make it into like a gravy. But I've had so much success with a raw diet, and not one that I purchase as a raw diet, but I get the components myself and distribute them as it's supposed to be 80% meat, 10% bones, 10% organ. So if you do, and that's not with every meal, it's with in a reasonable rotation. And I think that I'm glad to hear that you're that you're more supportive of it now, because initially when I had contacted you about that, there was some hesitation, but the proof is in the pudding. You know, you have a dog with clean smelling breath and no tooth issues, and they just look great. And so I'd like to encourage anyone who is even slightly contemplating it, it's the way to go. The kibbles are filled with too many things that are really not good. And that's what I had to say.
Well, Marjorie, I'm glad that you're doing so well, or that your dogs are doing so well on that diet. And I think that if they can handle it and there are no problems as a result of the poisoning, then that's great. My only other concern, Marjorie, is what I mentioned before, is that if it's 80% meat, 10% bones, and 10% organs, I can imagine that there are a lot of trace nutrients that would not be covered by that. Maybe they would be covered by the Nupro. I don't know. So when I want to make sure, I send people to a website called PetDiets.com, because there is a place that you could have a veterinary nutritionist analyze the diet and make sure that's 100% complete and balanced. And then I would be totally comfortable.
Okay, would you repeat the name of that website, please?
The one that I've used, I'm sure there might be others, is called PetDiets.com.
Great. I will check it out. And I do use the Nupro as the cover, because it's filled with many of the trace elements.
Marjorie, that it's always good if you could, especially in a dog, give them some vegetables, some green leafy vegetables. It couldn't hurt.
Right.
Carrots, dogs love carrots, and you could get some fresh vitamins and minerals from those things, or nutrients that they might not get as well from the Nupro.
Okay.
So it's always a good thing to add that. And even in cats who I agree are obligate carnivores, they'll sometimes eat the contents of their prey's stomachs in the wild.
Yes.
So they are getting some non-meat nutrition there, and that's something to keep in mind as well.
Marjorie, thanks
a
lot.
That's great. Thanks, Ray. You take care. Thank you, Dr. Sharp.
You're welcome, Marjorie.
Let's go to Angel in Poughkeepsie. Angel.
Hi. I actually, in keeping with the theme today, was wondering about a raw food diet, but kind of the opposite. I Well, my boyfriend and I had switched to a much more whole food diet ourselves and kind of wanted to bring our cats along with us. And for some reason, both of my cats would rather eat plastic than fish, which just baffled me. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm wondering if there's a reason that they would prefer plastic over food that they're supposed to eat naturally.
Well, are they preferring the plastic for ingesting purposes or for playing purposes, Angel?
Sometimes I can't tell.
So I think that
mostly to play, but they definitely have ingested plastic multiple times.
Okay, so two things that I would say about that are my concerns. Number one, that if you're going to be concerned about the possibility of food poisoning, that the vast majority of those bad bacteria are on the very superficial surfaces of the meat or the fish. So that if they're playing around with a wrapping, they might be getting a concentrated exposure to the worst bugs. Not that you need to worry any more than you already are, but the other concern that I would have is that sometimes cats love to not only play with linear type objects, whether it's the plastic or string or dental floss or yarn, whatever. But then if they consume that, if they eat it, then linear foreign bodies can cause big problems in cats. So, Angel, I would just say, can you just prevent them from having access to that plastic wrapper?
I've definitely been trying to. Sometimes they find them without me realizing that they found them. But I'm mostly just surprised, honestly, that, you know, if I try to let my cats eat, I've tried different types of fish, I've tried chickens. Sometimes they'll eat cheese, but usually I can't even get them to eat, like, a piece of chicken.
You know, I find that it is a little on the surprising side also. My own cat, who you would not think has a picky appetite to look at them, will often turn his nose up at really good stuff, like whether it's fish or meat. I wonder, Angel, I think that these pet foods, these kibbles on the market, are some of them just sprayed with stuff, whether it's fat or some kind of, not MSG, but some kind of attractive thing which is not necessarily good for them. I think that some of these cats are actually addicted to their dry food.
Interesting.
I think that my cat is one of them. And he would rather have that dry food, which is not fresh and doesn't smell as much as some of the fish that I've offered him. And I wonder what the heck they're spraying those foods with at the factory. And that's one of the reasons why whole foods are better, if only they were formulated in such a way to provide the cat with a complete and balanced nutrition.
Mm.
So I share you in your amazement and puzzlement, but I would just try to keep those wrappers away. And as far as just not to harp too much on food poisoning, the more you wash the meat, and this is true for us too, the more you wash the fish or you wash the meat before you cook it or feed it to an animal, the more those bad bugs you're getting off. And you also, of course, want to wash your own hands thoroughly with soap and water after that so you yourself don't get something like food poisoning or toxoplasma or something like that. I think that you just, Angel, you try to get them to have the highest proportion of good quality whole foods that you can, and whatever they insist on eating of the dry food, is that's just their decision. I mean, you know, you can't get into an argument with your cat that much. They usually win.
All right. So, Angel, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Good luck, Angel.
It's Liz in Voorheesville. Liz, you're on.
Yes. I own two miniature long-haired dachshunds, mother and daughter. And the mother is 14, and a few months ago, she started sneezing. I mean, violently sneezing, and, you know, like, you know, 10, 15 seconds in a row, even sometimes so hard that she would knock her nose against the floor. It was really kind of awful. And my son took her to the vet, and the vet said there was no sign of any kind of infection or anything. And, you know, what's coming out of her nose when she really sneezes a lot is clear. And this happened, you know, basically not during allergy season or anything, and nothing's really changed in their environment. Do you have any idea if it's an allergy or, you know, she's 14 years old. I don't really want to, you know, I'm not sure about putting her on an antihistamine or something because, you know, she's an old dog.
No. No, Liz, if you're talking about a 14-year-old dog, it's not the most common time for them to start showing an allergic reaction. It's possible. But especially since you said it started during a non-allergy season, that would not be the first thing I'd wonder about. So I don't know that the antihistamines are worth it. There's not much downside to trying it. But I would be much more suspicious, Liz, of something in the nasal passage that's bothering the dog, either a foreign body. In other words, she breathed something in, you know, whatever, a little wood chip or who knows what kind of piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Or she's got something growing in there, whether it's a bacterial infection or a fungal infection.
I believe the vet looked, you know, up her nose and couldn't find anything. Maybe I need to take her back and see, you know.
Well, an X-ray. I would do an X-ray, Liz. I mean, also good would be a little tiny endoscope, but to get one that's small enough to fit up a dachshund's, you know, nasal passage would not be easy. So
the irony is that I had throat cancer last year and have been scoped so many times. I think it would be highly ironic if my dog ended up with the same condition I had.
It would be ironic, but it would not be unheard of for me to hear of animals getting things that their people had. And they were not necessarily infectious things, you know, that spread.
Right.
But it is kind of weird sometimes.
Well, Liz, I'm afraid we are out of time, but thank you very much and good luck with that. Maybe follow up with us next time. And
get an X-ray.
Dr. Scharf, wonderful job, my friend. I appreciate
thanks,
it.
Ray.
We are just about out of time. I want to thank everybody who called. Sorry if you didn't make it through. Again, these are hugely popular programs. Dr. Scharf will be back next month. Get in early at that time. Support for WAMC comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning, waldorfsaratoga.org, and The Linda, presenting the Roots Music Festival Saturday, March 31st at 8 p.m., thelinda.org for more information. Thanks again for joining us. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell, our producer, the inimitable Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. On tomorrow's show, it's Birding with Rich Guthrie, and we welcome a special guest for part of the show. I won't say who it is. It is not Big Bird. All right, stay tuned now for a news update.